is I'm going to finish kind of talking over the perspectives that we started talking about last week, and then we're going to pick some issues, and we're going to look at them through the lens of Christian social justice, and we'll pick them apart a little bit, and talk about where we think we might land and where you might land, depending on which framework you, which perspective you wish to approach from.
And I'm sorry, I've got to run out at a quarter to 11.
That's okay. We should probably end a little bit early anyway, because we went way long last week. So,
I don't mind.
If you don't mind.
We'll take all your time.
Well, yes. So just to remind you, the five perspectives on social justice within the Christian tradition are libertarianism, liberalism, liberation theology, feminism, and virtue ethics. And we talked about libertarianism a good bit last week. Okay, which, just to remind you, it's the sense that individual autonomy is the greatest virtue, and that so anything that impacts individual autonomy, which they consider violence, including tax policy, taking money by force or threat of force, should be minimized. Now, all Christian social justice perspectives fall into one of these five, but of course none of them fall at the extreme end, and some of them are really a kind of mixture of several. But okay. But these five will give us kind of a handle on the basics. All right, so we talked about libertarianism last week, and I will say again, a lot of these words are used in the secular political context and in the context of Christian social justice. They may or may not be exactly the same as they're used in the secular political context. And liberalism is a good example of that. So when we talk about liberalism within the context of Christian social justice, the ultimate base of it is toleration. So remember, the ultimate base of libertarianism is autonomy. The ultimate base of liberalism is toleration. It's kind of the you do you, I'll do me, and as long as we aren't, you know, getting on to each other, you know, my right to swing my fist ends at your nose, as long as I stop before your nose.
All is good.
All is good. Okay. Liberalism, so using that as a basis, you develop a social contract that allows for a multiple of goods. And we talked before about how one of the issues with ethics is when goods come in conflict, right? So a liberal basis of social justice would allow for a multiple of goods. So if we're tolerating each other's positions, if I think helping others is the greatest good, and you think that individual autonomy is the greatest good, we can coexist. Mm-hmm. All right, so we can develop a social contract that allows for me to give and you to give as you choose, right?
As long as we don't tax them to give.
Well, liberalism doesn't care that much about that. they look at they try to find balances. The principal way that liberalism comes at discussing social, the idea of social goods and social justice is something called the veil of ignorance. So you assume you know nothing about the background in which you're going to be born, and then design a system that would be equitable. All right? So if you don't know if you're going to be born rich or poor, how would you design a social system to distribute the goods and the responsibilities of society? So what this basically comes down to is freedoms, that is the rights to do things, should be equally distributed. So freedom is equally distributed. Everybody gets an equal amount of freedom. So if the right to free speech is a right that we're going to give, then it's given to everybody, regardless of position in society. Okay? If the right to bear arms is a right we're going to give, then we give it to everybody, regardless of position in society. Right? Now remember, this is the extreme. You, in the real world, you walk that back a little bit. But that's the starting point, is rights, freedoms are evenly distributed. A minimum material standard of living is guaranteed by the society. So, and again, this comes out of the veil of ignorance. If you don't know if you're going to be rich or poor, then you would want to ensure that there is at least a minimum material standard of living. The government is the employer of last resort. So if you can't find a job anywhere else, the government should be the employer. But they shouldn't give you a job if you can get one in any place else. All right? So that, because one of the things that liberalism would say is that contributing to the society is a good, and everybody should have the ability to contribute. And if they can't find a way to gainfully contribute in the private sector, there should be a way in the public sector.
With no free handouts, no welfare.
No. There's a minimum material standard of living. So if you can't work, or then
okay.
You, yeah. So there's a
minimum. But if you can work, you work.
Yes.
Otherwise, you don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you can't work, there's still a material minimum standard of living. Mm-hmm. No barriers to education or employment based on inborn characteristics. So that's gender, race. They would consider religion an inborn characteristic. Any of those things that you can't control.
Like mental deficiencies.
Mental deficiencies, anything you can't control. Physical abilities, no barriers to education or employment based on those things. So,
what was your phrase again? Based on those things?
Inborn characteristics. Inborn.
Yeah.
Although they consider religion an inborn characteristic, which is open to some debate.
Yeah. That would be, in some baptism would,
yes.
would imply that,
mm-hmm.
but
yes.
not all religions have that.
No.
But you're just talking about Christianity and not talking about other religions?
No.
Like Judaism?
No, they would say all religions.
They would say all religions.
Yeah, they would say all religions.
Because, toleration sounds like it includes other points of view.
Right. So that's kind of the foundation of the liberal approach to social justice. So if we were, if we were looking to design a society on these principles, you now have a sense of how that might work. So back to our discussion about education. No barriers to education on things you can't control. So, for example, all schools would need to be completely handicapped accessible, because there shouldn't be a barrier to education based on physical
ability.
Right.
Well, and also offering classes for
for them
limited people or English learners.
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And the same thing would apply to private employers. No barriers to employment. So if you're going to employ somebody, you need to remove the barriers.
Even if it's a small business.
Even if it's a small business.
I think the law now doesn't include businesses
That's
under
right.
10 people.
That's right. So even if it's a small business, even if it's a religious business, no barriers to employment based on inborn characteristics.
And like education, there's a lot of girls' schools and boys' schools.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in school, I was at a girls' school.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do they tolerate that?
Funding. Biggest part of it, isn't it? Who funds that? Because we're talking about what the government is going to
do. Well, no. I mean, if you're on the extreme end, then that's what we're talking about is the ideal. Mm-hmm. In the ideal world, there would be no single-sex education.
Right.
Because that would put limits on boys or girls based on an inborn characteristic.
What about religious? Like schools?
They would say no.
No?
I mean, that's not entirely true. if you wanted to have a religious school, that's fine, but you have to accept
anybody.
Anybody, and you can't require them to.
You can't charge them more.
Right.
But is there not only based on whether you're getting tax dollars?
In the real world, we're not talking about the real world, Gigi. We're talking about the. We're not to the real world yet. We're still at the ideal.
We're still designing it.
Okay. So if you're building a world based on the liberal social justice ideal within Christian social justice,
okay,
because we tolerate. That's our basis.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're coming back to. All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now you're right when we get into the.
Yeah.
The actual world, but we're not there yet.
Okay.
We'll get to the actual world, but, you know.
It's hard not to think in those terms.
Yes.
Yes. Well, since they're the same terms.
Yes.
It is hard.
All right. So that's kind of the basis of liberal Christian social justice.
Okay.
All right. And if you need a hand of that, the veil of ignorance is the one that will help you remember that.
Okay.
That
okay.
If you don't know, assume you don't know what you're coming into and plan a society that's equitable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
This must have been where the framers were coming from when they developed everything. They talked about this stuff.
They did, yes. Mm-hmm. Actually, the tax system in the United States comes right out of the veil of ignorance. Mm-hmm. At least it did before we started putting loopholes in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of progressive taxation,
mm-hmm.
of poor people paying less and not just less ultimately, but a lesser percentage,
mm-hmm.
and rich people paying a greater percentage, that sense of progressive taxation comes right out of.
But we don't have that anymore.
Well, we do.
You do.
We do in theory, but then we put loopholes in it. So you can get around it.
But you sat around and said, here's this utopian mm-hmm. premise to start with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which one are we going? Where are we going?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right.
I imagine it takes a lot of different ones.
And until this flux that we're living in right now, Denmark was pretty close to that
mm-hmm.
idea.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had... they had a really progressive tax system to we'll talk about taxation when we talk about real world, but when you talk about taxation, everybody says, well, everyone should pay the same percentage, but a flat tax disproportionately impacts the poor.
Yes, absolutely.
Because 10% of, if you have $10,000, 10% of that is $1,000. Now try to live on $9,000.
Mm-hmm.
If you have $1 million, 10% is $100,000. Now try to live on $900,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to try that.
If I may.
I'm willing.
Yeah.
And so I moved to Denmark, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So progressive taxation says, you know, there's a line at which below which you should have no tax.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a point at which you should pay a small percentage, and the percentage should increase mm-hmm. as you have more and more.
But in these other areas that we've discussed, they've also been more progressive.
Yes. Yes. All right. Liberation theology. Now, this one is the one most people know if they've heard of any of these. This might be the one that they've heard of. Liberation theology comes out of Central American Catholicism. And it started with the sense of liberation from Eurocentric ethics. Because...
Repeat that statement again.
It started with the concept of liberation from Eurocentric ethics. Because if you think about Central America, mm-hmm. all of those nations were colonized, mm-hmm. right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so... When you come into, begins in the 1940s and 50s and really hits its stride in the 1960s. If you think about those nations, they were all colonized. They were mostly colonized by Spain that brought in religion. I'm going to close the door because we have a lot of noise
mm-hmm.
in the world today.
We're liberating ourselves from noise.
There's projects going on at both ends of the hall.
Well, thank you.
Meeting in the middle.
You said liberation from European...
Eurocentric ethics. So ethics that looked at European mm-hmm. values as the principle. But also liberation from patriarchy which was a huge thing and still is in South and Central America, and also other isms, right?
But isn't Central America Roman Catholic?
Yes.
Largely?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So how does that work with liberation from patriarchy?
Well.
Sorry.
That's the ideal.
Okay. That's the ideal. And the other piece is in liberation theology is also a huge piece of it is liberation from rule by the wealthy. So liberation theology comes from the parish priest serving the village, right? Not the cardinal serving the king, all right, or the president. Mm-hmm. A distinction without a difference in some of those countries. But
mm-hmm. What word did you use?
Liberation is liberation from also from rule by the rich.
That's it. Okay.
Okay. That's one of the things you're liberated from.
So a lot of these guys fled England?
Most of Central America, they fled Spain. Mm-hmm.
Spain, Portugal, and then later.
And they didn't actually flee Spain. They were sent.
Oh.
These are, you know, the American founding narrative, Western colonization narrative, is people who were uncomfortable for one reason or another in England came to America, some from Germany as well, but for either economic or religious freedom, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. In Spain, the Spanish colonization story is very different. In those cases, the government really identified people and
pushed them up.
Well, I would say incentivized them. And it really wasn't go or we'll put you in jail wasn't the incentive. The incentive was go and we'll make you rich. And so many of the people who came to Spain, unlike the English model where there's really no space for me to make the life I want in England, so I'll go and give it a try in the New World. Mm-hmm. In Spain, it was, here's a whole boatload of money and stuff. Mm-hmm. Go
increase.
Yes, go and increase it in the New World. So it's a very different
thing. They do it because of money? I mean, it sounds like they were getting rid of people who were fairly well off.
What they wanted was
more money.
They wanted the colonies to quickly be feeding back
money and goods and things
to Spain, and they wanted them to be controlled. And the easiest way to get them quickly to be controlled and profitable is to send a critical mass of people who are loyal to and committed to the mission of the crown.
So wasn't that the initial arrangement between England and the initial colonies? Weren't they taxed by England?
Well, they were taxed by the English, but not in this way. Yep. It wasn't planned.
It wasn't a cooperation arrangement.
Yeah, it wasn't planned as a.
And they weren't given the goods and the money and support to get started either.
Right, and they weren't made a part of the. While the Queen said, "Yeah, go," you know, Queen Elizabeth said, "Yeah, go form a colony." Mm-hmm. She didn't
do anything
much to support it. Just I'll let you take
Isabel
the land.
Did.
You know, I'll let you take the land.
Yes.
And if it works, you send me your taxes. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference between the two regions. So in Central America, where liberation theology comes out of, the wealthy. Mm-hmm. Really are a separate group from the poor. Often the poor are native or in some way or half native or and the wealthy are
Spanish.
What about all the Africans that are there? Same as here.
They came as slaves. And generally then after the end of slavery ended up inbreeding with the indigenous
population. And they were generally brought by the Spanish, I believe.
Yes, yes.
And the Portuguese.
Yes. So that's the environment from which this theology comes, right? So when we talk about liberation, we're talking about liberation from the rich, from the colonizer, from the patriarchy, from the from poverty, from...
But they were Roman Catholics.
They all are Roman Catholics.
So their allegiance in theology was to the Roman Catholic.
Right. Mm-hmm. And this comes out of Roman Catholicism, liberation theology, but it comes out of the... There's a huge difference in the Central and South African or South American Roman Catholic Church between the on-the-ground parish clergy and the upper-level clergy. There's a huge difference between them in a way that there isn't so much in this country.
That's why Pope Francis keeps running amok in Rome.
That's exactly the point I was going to bring out. So now they have a pope that is from that original approach.
Well, no, because he was an archbishop in...
But in South America.
In South America, but he was... But my point being that the bishops and archbishops are an entirely different class
Than the parish.
Than
I
the parish
see,
clergy.
Okay. So, but at some point he must have started as a parish priest. No?
In most of the Roman Catholic Church, and even in the American Roman Catholic Church, if you've been picked out in seminary as someone who's going to be
leadership,
you generally don't spend a lot of time serving as parish clergy. They send you to Rome for additional training, and
so do you think
become an administrator.
What's going on in Central America with this liberation theology that the priests... They didn't go to seminary in Central America.
The parish clergy went to seminary in Central America. The leadership clergy went to seminary in Rome.
So the leadership people are in a different...
A different class, a different school.
Okay. Liberation, probably a different philosophy.
A different philosophy. Yeah. Liberation theology comes out of the parish clergy. Okay. Part of the reason Oscar Romero was assassinated was that he was a leadership clergy who... accepted liberation theology as the way God was calling the church. And so that made him a traitor to his class.
Wow.
And that's why he was assassinated.
Wow. I'm not familiar with that. When was that?
The 1980s. He was a cardinal in El Salvador.
I do remember.
She says. as if she's...
Question mark.
Yes.
Wait, let me Google.
So the liberation theology comes from the bottom up.
Okay.
Okay? And that makes it a huge threat. And so in the 60s and the 70s, the Catholic Church spends a lot of time trying to keep the lid on this liberation theology thing because it's a little bit challenging. It's actually a lot challenging. But what it comes out of, theologically, Jesus says, I came that they may have life and may have it abundantly. Okay, that Jesus said that to us, right? That's one of his sayings. I came that they may have life and may have it abundantly. So liberation theology says, God came that we all might have abundant life. Liberation from all of these things that are oppressing us is justice. Justice is salvation, because in justice we have the abundant life that Jesus promised. Okay? So liberation, justice, and salvation are all equivalent. So the way you get justice is to liberate from these things that have been imposed. It also stands with the strong, and we've talked about this from the beginning, God has a preferential option for the poor. And this is right there. That if you have to make a decision about what to do and you want to follow the ways of God, God says the poor and the oppressed come first. So if you have something to give, the poor and the oppressed come first. If you're designing the way you distribute your society's benefits, the poor and the oppressed come first. If you're deciding how you distribute the society's requirements, the poor and the oppressed have a lesser requirement than those who have more. because God has a preferential option for the poor and the oppressed. And that's the core of this. The statement, if you want one to remember, is no one is free until all humanity is liberated. Okay. No one is free until all humanity is liberated.
Thank you. Is that your statement?
No, that's a core statement of liberation theology. And I forget who said it first, but it's been taken around the world. In the anti-apartheid movement in the 80s, this got scrawled on the walls of the South African embassies, you know. Mm-hmm. No one is free until all humanity is liberated. So that's liberation theology, is in a nutshell. No one is free until all humanity is liberated. So as long as there's oppression, right, Nobody is free. You may think you're free, but you're wrong. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's a real class warfare.
And this goes, I mean, it fits right in with the early church of they had everything in common, right? Well, maybe. but liberation theology would say yes. And as close as we can get to that, that's what it should be.
I can see where feminism is coming from.
Yes.
It's laid directly there.
Yeah, so now we're into feminism, which is the next one. But let me stop and say, do you have any other questions about liberation theology before I start talking about feminism?
How does this play in at the moment with South America's various crises and this whole refugee caravan?
Well, you're now asking a question that includes political economy as well as social justice. But the way it continues to play out is South and Central America are the canaries in the coal mine about economic inequality, because they've been living with economic inequality a lot longer than the rest of the world. So they're about 20 years ahead of North America and Western Europe. They, you know, we're now at the place where there are corporate executives that make 50 times the wages of a regular worker. That's relatively new in American and Western European society, that level of income disparity. That's been true in Central and South America for much longer. So if you want to see what the world might look like in 30 years, take a look at Central America, Peru, Brazil, Venezuela.
But it sounds like there's more of an effort to keep the poor down there. That,
yes.
You know, that because there's this rising, where these people think they deserve more, the classes are clashing. Mm-hmm. We're here, it's always been the philosophy, you work hard, you can get there. You know, we're not going to keep you down, but that's the ideal.
Well, it's the ideal, and for a long time it was the reality. Mm-hmm. For example, when my father went to college, he could work, and what he made in an hourly wage was roughly, he could, in working 10 hours a week for 8 weeks, mm-hmm, he could pay for a college course. Mm-hmm. All right? So that, you know, so you could work hard and succeed because you could pay your way through college, you know. You could, it was doable to both go to college and work and pay for college, mm-hmm, right?
Right?
Now, that's not true. You would have to work, working at minimum wage, assuming, mm-hmm, you would have to work 60 hours a week for 20 weeks to pay for a college course.
Okay. You can no longer say everybody can go to college.
So everybody, you can't say everybody can go to college.
Right.
It's no longer possible
to
work your way through college. So if you want to get a higher education, you have to either already be rich, mm-hmm, or go into debt.
Yeah.
And it is not unusual now for people to graduate from undergrad with $30,000 or $40,000, mm-hmm, in debt before they start. More insidious, people who are $20,000 in debt who discover who just can't do it,
yeah.
can't earn enough money to live and continue to go to school, mm-hmm. but they still have $20,000 in student loan debt, mm-hmm. And they can't get the better job. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the manufacturing jobs that used to allow somebody with a high school diploma to make a middle class living mm-hmm. don't exist.
Those jobs are gone, yeah.
So, I mean, even the...
And that's the kind of work that a lot of kids did to go to college.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They would work in the foundries or the mm-hmm. various plants and warehouses mm-hmm. and go to college. And they made it, and then they got out of that loop and mm-hmm. into a different loop.
So the ability to work your way out of poverty in the last 30 years in the United States has really disappeared. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that studies have shown recently is that particularly for people of color, but for all people, like everything, societal ills impact people of color more yeah. than others. First-generation middle-class people are far more likely to fall out of the middle class back into poverty than they ever have been in the past. So even if you've made it out, the chances of your children continuing mm-hmm. to not starting live in poverty are starting to decline. Mm-hmm. So while that used to be true for us, mm-hmm. that, you know, and people who, like us, who live in, you know, comfortable surroundings and were born in comfortable surroundings can continue to say, oh, just work hard and you'll mm-hmm. succeed. That door is rapidly closing. And so we're about to become.
Mm-hmm. So I think because that's our philosophy, people still think that will work.
Right.
So a recognition that that's not working any longer is what's causing,
it's causing
these philosophies to clash.
Exactly. So if you live in poverty in the United States, you're acutely aware mm-hmm. that the ability to work your way out of poverty is not a realistic expectation. If you don't live in poverty in the United States, the realization that the ability to work your way out of poverty in the United States is something that you can know about if you choose to, but you don't have to care about.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same level of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. Poor people don't understand that it's more and more mm-hmm. impossible to get out, mm-hmm. and the better off people don't realize that it's almost impossible to get out.
Mm-hmm.
We keep saying,
well, you can see the philosophy
you're
and the
not working
two different
hard
political systems. You can see the clash.
Yeah, well, this really impacts refugees too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
it does.
This
it does.
Attitude toward
mm-hmm.
yes,
mm-hmm. and that distinction of people who live with something have to live with it, and people who don't have to live with it can know about it if they choose to. That's the definition of privilege. When we talk about white privilege or economic mm-hmm. privilege, that's what we're talking about. You know, I don't have to worry about that unless I want to.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If I want to, that's fine. But if I want to go home and watch, Homeland on Netflix, mm-hmm. I can do that and not think about this.
Yeah.
And I never have to think about this.
Mm-hmm. Does a college education help people?
It does. The distinction between of earning potential over a lifetime, mm-hmm. Between a high school diploma and a college degree, is substantial.
Mm-hmm.
It's several million dollars over the course of a lifetime of earnings. But it's harder and harder to...
And it depends on what field you go into also.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And some colleges and universities are cutting out liberal arts programs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're not going to have English majors anymore.
Right, because even if you're
like that,
because even if you're a middle class kid, you're going to come out of college with substantial debt.
And need more.
And you can't do an entry level job that a liberal arts degree might get you because you can't afford to pay your debt.
Mm-hmm.
So there's now no market for... No,
right, so the emphasis of getting a college education,
right.
I mean, the way you look at it is one way, but another way is to get a general education.
Right.
To be cultured and so on.
That's
mm-hmm. not there anymore.
No.
Now it's all, I get a job after this?
Right.
Yes.
It's all turning into job training.
Mm-hmm.
For those of us who have, had a different...
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you look at it, there's an education inflation. You know, even when I went to college, you could become an elementary school teacher or a high school teacher with a bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. Can't do that anymore. You have to have a master's.
Right. Yes, even I had to go back for master's mm-hmm. in order to get a job.
Yeah, I can't do this job. I mean, 20 years, or, well, more than 20 years ago, 50 years ago, you could be a priest with a college degree. Mm-hmm. Now you need a master's. Mm-hmm. So
my daughter, who is a physical therapist, mm-hmm. graduated with 4 years of college, mm-hmm. able to be licensed in just about any state as mm-hmm. a PT. Then it became necessary to have 5 years, mm-hmm. and she was grandfathered in. Mm-hmm. But now you have to have a doctorate to be a PT. Mm-hmm. There are no PTs out there without a doctorate. She had to change professions.
Well, and another thing we might talk about is how licensing requirements
yes.
keep people in poverty.
Yes.
To braid hair, which is a big thing in the African American mm-hmm. community
yeah.
because braiding hair is a thing. You now have to be licensed. You now have to have a cosmetology license.
Oh, really?
Which is yeah. a 2-year degree.
You can't just do it in your home.
You can't just do it in your home. You have to have a license, and to have the license, you have to have a 2-year degree.
And you have to pay for those licenses. And
right.
Just courses. Be a regular barber or beautician.
Yeah, you have to have those licenses too. License. Yeah, the same license.
Yeah.
It's the same license.
You know, it's not just thieves. It's just the little things. Like, even my parents, when we think back, mm-hmm. we may do with one car. We didn't mm-hmm. live so far from the city. We could walk or take a bus. Or mm-hmm. not having a computer in the home is really a disadvantage. Or having mm-hmm. a cell phone. Mm-hmm. All these things that now are, you know, we just take it for granted. You have mm-hmm. them. You can't
have
books in your home.
We're all going to give up our cars and use Uber and...
Well, at least that's there for people who can't afford it.
One of the conversations that they were talking about is a lot of businesses that are going cashless, that
yes.
you can't buy things with cash anymore, but about 30% of our country don't have bank accounts.
Right.
So if you don't have
or
a bank...
Or credit cards.
Yeah. So if you don't have a bank account or a credit card, like,
how do you
buy something at a cashless...
Yeah.
And
place.
All these little businesses where you might just pop in to get something and you have no cash, but you have your credit card, they have to pay an extra amount mm-hmm. to use mm-hmm. your credit card.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it costs them more money to accept mm-hmm. a credit card. Mm-hmm. So being cashless hurts them because less people who could afford to buy more of their stuff, can't use their credit card or else it costs them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they bring me more business. I think that's yeah. the feeling.
That's what they hope, but that doesn't always
work.
People don't
care if you overcharge your card.
Yeah. No. It doesn't yeah. always work. Yeah. Like
so,
on Grand Street,
yeah.
it's that you really feel it.
So it's, you know,
right.
so all of these things that we don't think about,
yes. mm-hmm.
you know, oh, I don't have a car, I'll just call an Uber. Mm-hmm. Well, if I have a cell phone and
a credit card.
Yeah. I can call
exactly.
But if I don't have a cell phone or a credit card, I can't call an Uber.
That was one of the library system's huge complaints about Collins when he mm-hmm. was a county executive and he mm-hmm. started slashing libraries mm-hmm. left and right. Mm-hmm. His feeling was books are going out of style anyway, and if you want to read, you can go to Barnes & Noble. And you can use your electronic devices, and mm-hmm. there's no reason to have all these libraries with all these computers.
See, that's how wealthy people think.
Because, mm-hmm. yes, mm-hmm. this is the difference in privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody has at least one computer in their home. Mm-hmm. Well, even now, I've been retired 10 years, you walk into a library, there's not an empty computer anywhere.
No.
And it's the only way these kids and their parents can get the school information. Mm-hmm. Everything
in
all
the
schools
now.
Is
yeah.
online. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. if you want a note from the teacher, mm-hmm. you have to have a computer. Mm-hmm. Parents from the city schools use those computers in the library all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We've kind of gone into the real world,
yes.
but that's okay. We'll keep with it because something else that was in the news recently. We talked about the school lottery in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Until a week ago, if you wanted to enter your kids in the school lottery in Buffalo, you had to physically bring your application to Central Registry, which is only open between 9 and 4, Monday through Friday. So if you're working a job that doesn't allow you to take off Monday through Friday between 9 and 4, you don't have a car.
Right. Mm-hmm.
How are you getting to Central Registry between 9 and 4, Monday through Friday. You can't mail it in. They don't accept them through the mail. And because you have to provide proof of residence, and they won't take them over the internet.
Oh. Yeah.
So they finally changed that, and now are allowing them to be, you still can't mail them in, but you can
do them online.
Oh. Because you can scan your proof of residence and attach it. Assuming you have a scanner, and you know, but the library.
But the library has a scanner. And even in the Lancaster Library, where I work most of the time, those computers are constantly busy by people who don't have computers at home.
We do a game with our youth group every other year or so the kids don't get bored with it, that we call the poverty simulation. We give each of the kids a life. So, you know, this is who you are. This is these are the documents you have. This is the education you have. These are the children you have. Here's some stuffed animals to be your children. You know, you have to, they have to get a job. They have to get care for their children. They have to enroll school-age children in school. They have to get food and lodging and transportation to their job and to their kid's school. By the end of the game, we usually play for 2 hours. Every time we play it, at least half the kids end up in jail for child endangerment or child abandonment.
Is that right?
Because they can't do it all.
I see.
You know, you can't take your kid to a job interview. You can take your kid to a Social Security office, but you may or may not get served.
I see.
And then one of the things that we that is part of the game is fate. So you're just about making it. And then Faint says, well, you just slipped on the ice, because it's Buffalo and you could, and broke your leg. Well, guess what? You're not going to be at work for
2 months.
2 months, because you broke your leg. You did not have, you hadn't had your Medicaid appointment yet, so you don't have any insurance. So you have a $10,000 medical bill, because you were uninsured at the emergency room. And you just lost your job because your boss says
no show,
no call, you know, no show, no job, and you don't have any sick leave because you work, the job you work doesn't provide it. So now what are you going to do? That's not fair. And that would be the point.
Oh my gosh.
No, in fact, it's not fair. But,
no, it isn't.
But, you know, we don't realize the extra costs of being poor. The Family Justice Center is one of the groups this church supports, and it puts all of the things you need if you're dealing with domestic violence in one place. Part of the reason they started was they did the math, and they discovered that if you didn't have a car in Buffalo to go to all of the places you needed to go to get all of the services you needed if you were leaving a domestic violence situation, you would spend 46 hours just on the bus. Not getting the service, just on the bus to get from one place to another. Because bus routes don't work like cars. And so then you add in the amount of time of actually getting the services. And so the first thing they did was say, well, everything needs to be in one place so that you can get everything in one place.
And if you're a refugee, it's even harder, because my granddaughter worked at the International Institute last summer as an intern, and her job was to get a refugee who was usually a family, and she had to take them either on the bus or in her car to all these places. And with a refugee, you have even more disparate places you have to get to than if you're just a natural citizen trying to live.
And the language problem also?
Yes.
On top of it.
Yeah, she never was able to speak the language of her passengers, but she had to help them through all the hoops.
Oh, my God.
All right, so having talked about all of that, let's get back to feminism. That's one of our frameworks. Feminism. The foundation of feminism is justice means, so in the feminist framework, justice means all people having access, I'll say this again, but all people having access to adequate resources to meet human needs and given the opportunity to participate meaningfully in their communities. All right, that's the feminist kind of bottom line. All people having access to adequate resources to meet human needs, and given the opportunity to participate meaningfully in their communities.
You want to do it once more?
One more time. All people having access to adequate resources to meet human needs, and given the opportunity to participate meaningfully in their communities.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Like liberation theology, feminism has preferences for the marginalized and the oppressed, and says that that is necessary. What makes it distinctive is it says, when we say all people, we mean all people, and that we include women in that, which is pretty radical, even today.
Even in liberation, it's not.
Liberation says the poor, but doesn't have a particular... It's still, while liberating from the patriarchy is one of the things they care about...
It hasn't happened.
It hasn't happened, and, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, down the list. Mm. Feminism says everybody.
More inclusive.
Mm-hmm. The problem that feminism runs into is something that gets called intersectionality. So you have racism, classism, and all of those other things. Mm-hmm. Feminism, while it starts with the basis of all people having access to these things, it quickly became about white women. And if you look at kind of feminist groups today, they really do advocate much more effectively for middle-class white women than for anybody else, right? Because if we're going to pair, you know, we have women, we have people of color, we have the LGBTQ community, we have all of these people who have claimed to be the oppressed needing preferential option, right? Well, what do you do when some of those intersect? So what do you do with a black woman who is dealing with racism and also sexism and patriarchy? Which do you address first? What do you do with a woman who is also gay and has claims to both of those things? And feminism falls back I don't want to say thoughtlessly, that's harder, a harsher indictment than I mean, but falls back unconsciously on, well, everyone, we mean everyone, mm-hmm. but without
you
really digging into,
mm-hmm.
you know, well, what does that really mean? You know, what does it really mean when those intersections happen? And so, for example, right after the 2016 presidential election, there was that women's march, mm-hmm. particularly in Washington, but all over the place. Mm-hmm. One of the huge criticisms from women of color was, all of this is headed by white women. Mm-hmm. There were no women of color voices in the planning or on the stage. So who are you speaking for?
White women. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So who are you speaking for? You know, because what you think is important, maybe in my world, is not the most important thing. Mm-hmm. No. Access to the boardroom is maybe not the most important thing for women living in poverty. Right? Mm-hmm. So the problem with feminism is that it starts with, well, we need to liberate women, but doesn't really take into account the intersection of that women aren't one thing. Mm-hmm. That women are also people of color, women are also people who are oppressed, women are also people who are living in poverty, women are also disabled, women are also, so that's the challenge when feminism meets the real world, is
coloring it.
How do we really make it a movement for all women? And that's kind of part of the reason that my generation first started to kind of say, well, don't call me a feminist, because we kind of looked around and said, well, you're not really speaking for me. Mm-hmm. So who else are you speaking for? Mm-hmm. So that's a...
And once you get into the transgender issue, you can get into bathrooms and letters.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that brings up everything.
Mm-hmm. Boy, does it ever.
Mm-hmm. But do you, when you speak to one issue, a feminist issue, are you raising all women? Even though it might not be your priority, but by advocating for women at one level, are you elevating the whole boat by doing
that? That's interesting. The evidence is mixed. Mm-hmm. That in some cases, yes. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, not really. Mm-hmm. So...
Okay. My daughter, again, and this is financial and brings in business and economy, mm-hmm. but she's gay. She tried to buy a house, and this was maybe 25 years ago. And she had the house, she had the down payment, everything, but the closing kept being moved, and the bank would not close. Mm-hmm. And finally, after about 6 months of this craziness, she called one day, and I had happened to have need of a lawyer about that time for my own situation. And it turned out, and I didn't know it until I came to a funeral here, but she was a gay lawyer. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that initially, mm-hmm. but then I saw her name in the paper as the state head of the gay movement mm-hmm. in New York State. So I said to Michelle, I said, okay, tell the banker that if they can't settle on a date and hold it, that you're going to call your lawyer and name her, mm-hmm. Sherry Reich, and see what happens. They closed Friday that week.
How would they know your daughter was gay? Is it on the application?
Pardon me?
How would they know your daughter's gay? From
they would assume. They assume a single woman of a certain age mm-hmm.
buying a house
by herself is...
Well, maybe, too, that was just against women. I mean, maybe they always thought women couldn't afford things and couldn't... I mean, it could
it's
be.
Possible,
I have a gay son, so I understand.
But when she mentioned Sherry Reich,
mm-hmm. you know, Sherry. Mm-hmm.
They closed. Mm-hmm. And Sherry Reich had been written up in the Long Island mm-hmm. papers mm-hmm. as the new head of the big New York State.
And she's... Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. She's like a dog with a bone. I know her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it may just be they're scared of her, which is a good
yes.
position to take.
Yes. But it just showed yeah. how a common, ordinary person, I mean, mm-hmm. I live here yeah. and she lives there.
Yeah.
And if she hadn't mentioned that on the phone and I hadn't just yeah. happened mm-hmm. to come across that mm-hmm. piece of information, I said, if you actually need her, I'll talk to her and I'll get the information for you.
What's even more astounding is your daughter listened to your advice.
No. Yes. 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 Exactly.
Great job for you.
That was one of the few times.
Well, she chose the right time.
Yes.
Right?
But it points out how we, in our comfort zone, mm-hmm. do not understand what life is all about for anybody that's not in our same situation.
Exactly.
Any more than we understand Colin's situation. Mm-hmm. You know,
but that's why
dealing with
anybody who comes from an ideological place where
yes.
this is the way I feel without really mm-hmm. having encountered and understanding what it's mm-hmm.
yeah.
about,
well,
that's why it's tough.
And
yeah.
of course the problem with ideology is that, as we've seen with any of these examples, is the real world does not fit neatly into our boxes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The real world is complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. and it's full of goods in conflict, which we're going to find out next week when we start talking about mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. the struggle of goods in conflict, because autonomy and equity and justice and equality all... Mm-hmm. It's a soup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they tug of war at each other. Mm-hmm. And so...
And misunderstandings are just so hard to avoid because we don't know what the other person honestly feels. We assume mm-hmm. we know.
Mm-hmm. But also you feel so helpless, too. You're this little tiny ant, you know, mm-hmm. in this big world. And, you know, what can I do about
it? Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
how can I make a difference? What can I do?
Mm-hmm. Where can I contribute?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's do virtue ethics, and then we'll end for today, okay? Because this is the last one, and then we'll be ready to talk about some other things. So virtue ethics, at its basis, says justice is about the kinds of relationships we have and the sorts of people we are called to be. So at its base, justice is about right relationship and right living. Hence virtue.
Repeat the first sentence again.
Justice is about the kinds of relationships we have and the sorts of people we are called to be. All right. So it's about right relationship and right living, hence virtue. You have virtuous relationships, you live virtuously, and out of that comes justice.
That's pretty idealistic.
Yes.
That sounds more religious than some of the other ones.
It is a little bit more religious than some of the other ones. And it starts with, it goes back to the Abrahamic faith reactions. Love God, love your neighbor. And I put this on the sign sometimes because I like it. Love God, love neighbor, change the world. That's basically virtue ethics, is if you love God and you love your neighbor, you will change the world. Okay? That's where it comes from, is that sense that if we keep the two great commandments, then...
Say that again. Love God.
Love neighbor.
Okay.
Change the world.
Change the world. Okay.
And it comes out of that faith basis of Jesus said, on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. So if we keep these two commandments, then we will build the kingdom of God. And the kingdom of God is, by definition, a just kingdom because God is just. So if you want justice, love God, love neighbor, change the world. Well, that's, and it's lovely, and it's
very
true,
simple.
And it feels very good, and it feels very simple. And then you try to apply it. So what does it really mean to love God?
What does it really mean to love
your neighbor? And what does it really mean to love your neighbor? And not just love your neighbor, but love your neighbor as yourself.
But what does it mean to love yourself?
And not just your neighbor,
and what does
your
it mean
enemy.
To love yourself?
That's a good question, too.
So, you know,
which
like,
neighbor?
Yeah. Who's my neighbor? I mean, from the very beginning. You know, Jesus got asked that.
Yeah.
So, like all of these, the foundation, the ideal makes sense, and then you begin to apply it. All right, well, what does it mean to love my neighbor who doesn't want to be loved? What does it mean to love my neighbor who is a sociopath? What does it mean to love my neighbor who is just different enough from me that we don't speak the same language? Not necessarily literally, but metaphorically. And what does it mean to love myself? If I'm supposed to love my neighbor as myself, how do I love myself?
What would you say to that?
Well, that's a very good question, because there's a very fine line between loving yourself and being selfish, right? And we're consistently told not to be selfish. On the other hand, we're told to love ourselves. The way I usually take that is, I like the Jewish definition of it slightly better, which is, what is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor, and that's a good starting point, and that once we accomplish that, then we can look at the next level. But I like that one. What is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbor.
Yeah. Well, and for loving yourself, we're created by God as a special being from the beginning. So I think that to me, when I try to figure it out, loving myself is taking proper care of myself, not ignoring what I need to do. Like sometimes with medications, you lose your appetite. So you have to remind yourself, if I'm going to be whole and healthy, I have to remember to eat at least a couple times a day, even if I have no appetite. And obviously I managed to keep going. I haven't lost an ounce, but I have no appetite. So then you have to think, too, okay, so are you doing that correctly? I'm obviously eating enough junk to keep my weight on, even though So there's all these balances, just mm-hmm. like the balances in the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, think about love yourself could be a question of humility, too. Mm-hmm. Because, yes. you know, mm-hmm. oh, I love myself, I'm going to buy myself that dress I want. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to, right. you know, spend my money on me. Mm-hmm. You know, you could take it the other extreme.
Well, and also, you know, take it back to ground is, I believe that I am a unique and uniquely loved child of God. Mm-hmm. And I believe that about everybody. But as we all know who have ever been children or been around children, mom loves me best, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I'm a unique and uniquely loved child of God, and God might love me just a little bit better than he loves you. No, that sneaks in there a little bit, right?
Well, or what if your neighbor doesn't believe in God?
That's right.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Then where are you?
And you know, we look at our baptismal covenant, one of the things we promise is to strive for justice and peace among all people and respect the dignity of every human being. So you start from the premise that every human being has a dignity that must be respected. Mm-hmm. So that's one place to start.
Exactly.
And but you need to apply that to yourself, too. Mm-hmm. I have a dignity.
You have to have self-respect. Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And that's sometimes very hard to find mm-hmm. for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And if you can't find your own dignity, your own self-respect, it's much more difficult to give respect...
Yes.
Mm-hmm. To others, because you don't have it to draw on. Mm-hmm. So that's a challenge. But then the balance point is, where does it become
mm-hmm. pride?
Pride, selfishness.
Because right. mm-hmm. I can see, like, if your self-respect comes from keeping yourself clean,
right?
You know, and now you face someone who, in poverty,
right,
may get on the bus and smells, you mm-hmm. know, next to you, or you mm-hmm. know, for whatever.
Mm-hmm. So how offended so, are you?
Yeah, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm.
And what do you do? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you do? And if, you know, and one of the things I say is, you know, if you were in that situation, what would you want someone to do for you? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, my first sentence was do by self, you know, so.
If that were you.
So if that were me in that situation, mm-hmm. I kind of really value my independence. And so I would want whoever's trying to help me to honor my uh-huh. my own ability to, you know, to make my own decisions and take care of myself mm-hmm. while still, you know. So that's a real challenge, mm-hmm. is because,
and the,
you know.
And the balance is just so hard because you can't give to others what you don't have yourself.
Right.
So you have to kind of figure that out.
Whether it's money or self-respect.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, and one of the...
Care of self.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And one of the kind of axioms in psychology and pastoral care is hurt people hurt people. So people mm-hmm. who have been hurt tend to
hurt others.
Hurt others.
You're abused.
Yeah. Yeah.
Abuse leads to abuse. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Bullies. People who have been bullied tend to become bullies. Mm-hmm.
And it's really important about the type of home you grow up in.
Determines, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Determines a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that is probably a good place to stop.
Okay.
Given our conversations and where we live, I wonder if refugees, immigration, and national identity might be a good place to start with our real world.
Sure.
Application and maybe have some conversation about what are the goods in conflict in those situations and what might a Christian ethic of social justice look like, mm-hmm. and what might several Christian ethics of social justice look like, because there are several.
And what can we honestly do, mm-hmm. and without being offensive?
And then once we've done that, maybe we'll pivot the lens and look at it from a non-Abrahamic faith position.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I would go Judaism and Islam, but the distinctions are small, so we might just flip the lens to
Asian.
Yeah, Demo. Buddhist or Hindu or Shinto look at that, because it would give us it would be more of a kaleidoscope effect,
yes.
than mm-hmm. than just moving just a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, great.
Okay.
So next week is our last week.
Last week before January. Christmas. Last week before Christmas. So.
You want to make a little social thing of it? Do you want to?
Oh, that would be lovely. So if you want to bring cookies or something.
If you happen to have cookies made or whatever.
Is it okay if I buy them at Wegmans?
Absolutely.
Wegmans. I'm not judging.
Yeah.
I
don't have any cookies made.
That's part of our culture.
I'm sorry. I do not cook or bake.
I love to.
I don't have those abilities.
I love to bake, but I have no time at Christmas.
Does everybody drink coffee, or do people like tea?
We can make coffee.
We can make coffee. We have a Keurig, and we have a coffee pot, so we can make coffee,
okay.
and we can make tea.
Yeah, we can make tea. We have tea.
All right, so just bring a little.
Bring a little nibble okay. of something, okay. and we'll...
Maybe we'll let the other people know who are here
yes,
today.
Yes, absolutely.
Donna and...
Yes, when I send out the link, I'll let them know.
Art might like to come then.
Yes.